Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Lou.
Good morning.
So we're going to be talking about the Gita today, and I'm going to be talking about the 35 qualities of a spiritual person. In Sanskrit, it says 35 qualities of a bhakta, which is a devotee or a spiritual person. And I thought, even though this is at the end of chapter 2, I would bring that up because, like Lou was saying to me before, he said, he liked the golf tips.
Yeah.
And that makes sense.
Give me something I can use.
Right. I mean, I could go through verse by verse, but this will take years. I think if I just picked up some of the salient points in the Gita, it would be very helpful to us. So what you notice by looking at the Gita so far is that we're not talking about going to the temple, going to the church, going to a mosque, doing rituals and things like that. Many people shy away. My own relatives often, when I say, what do you know about the Gita? They say, oh, no, don't talk to me about the Gita, because it's like saying to somebody, look, I'm going to talk to you about the Bible. They run away from it. They don't want to hear anything about religion. But you found that the Gita is very practical. There's no rituals that are prescribed here. There's no do this, you must do this, or you must do that. It basically tells you how to run your life. I mean, how much simpler does it get than that?
It's not outside control. It's telling you that you have control and teaching you how to control.
And you'll see with these 35 qualities that basically, when you look at them, you may say, well, that's 35 qualities of a spiritual person. And what does that have to do with me? I put on a tie and a jacket and I go to work. That has nothing to do with me. Spiritual person is somebody who dresses in either white robes or saffron-colored robes.
Sits
on a mountain, cross-legged.
Yeah.
That's not what it is. I think that each one of us, if we listen to these 35 qualities, we will recognize, as I was taught by Gautam Jain, that if you focus on one of these qualities that you think, I could accomplish this, and I'll give you personal examples of how it changed me many, many, many years ago. If you focus on one of them, the rest tend to follow.
Hmm.
And the example Gautam Jain gave was that if in chemistry classes, you remember we had different beakers filled with water at different heights?
Yes.
They were all connected with tubes to other beakers. And basically what the experiment proved is that water finds its own level.
That's right.
You pour water in one and it sort of goes through these channels, and then ultimately all the levels come to the same. And what he was saying is that if you're a good person, somebody who's a spiritual person, if you're good in one aspect of your life, the rest automatically tend to follow. So the Gita gives us 35 qualities, and then it says, you pick which one seems closest to your heart that you think you can accomplish. And if you do that, the rest follow.
Hmm.
So, and I'll tell you from personal experience how I did this for myself. I'm not saying that I'm a spiritual person. I'm like in grade 2 or grade 3 in school, not a PhD. And some of you are ahead of me, and some of you may be not even in grade 2, which is fine. This is the reason we're doing this.
Well, don't object to that. Aren't we all spiritual people to some extent?
To some extent, all of us have a spirit within us.
Right, whether how much we're in touch with it.
How much we are actually employ that, how much we actually think about it is the key.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of us wants to step forward and get to be a more spiritual person. And it helps, and I'll show you how. So, why do we do this? What is the purpose of doing this in the first place? And a self-realized person is somebody who has realized his own self, with a capital S, has come in touch with his Atman, his soul, and has become one with that. How do you do that? As the later chapters of the Gita will tell you, you do that through meditation. And basically in meditation, you close your eyes and you sit still and you sit in one place and you just think of one thought, and that is being without any other thought, and you get in touch with your Atman. And that changes you. But in order to do that, if you close your eyes and sit in a quiet place, you'll see that what takes over is your mind, not your intellect, But your mind takes over and you say, wow, at 3 o'clock I have this appointment, at 4 o'clock, and yesterday, what did that guy say to me? And all these thoughts will keep going through. So you sit there for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and you've done nothing but basically use your mind to think about different right. things. In true meditation, your mind is without desires, without the concept of I or my, without the mindness or possessiveness, and you can get rid of all of that, and your single thought is nothing. No thought, and you're thinking only about the self, and you basically get to that point. In our lifetime, I don't think any of us, very few of us, if any, will get to be self-realized. But if you get even one iota, one inch to the side, towards that, your life will be different, as I can tell you from my own experiences. So spirituality is a devotion, part of devotion, and devotion is an emotion. So it comes from the mind. Mm-hmm. Remember, we talked about all emotions come from the mind. The intellect is basically judgment. Yes, no, this, no. And so these are qualities of improving the mind and the devotion. So it doesn't mean those people that go to temples or to dress in saffron robes or fast or, you know, say prayers, nothing like that. These 35 qualities, I have often wondered why they're in that order. I don't know. I wondered because the first quality is adrishta sarvabhutanam, which means hating no being in Sanskrit. Hmm. So that's the first quality.
Yes.
I often thought, why is that the first quality? Why not the next one or the third one? Why is this not seventh? I don't know the answer to that question. Is it saying that if you can accomplish the first, the second becomes easier? I don't have the answers to that question. But the first one is hating no being. The beauty of the Gita, as I said in earlier sessions, nothing was written 3,000 years BCE. Everything was oral. They had to be concise in their words. They had to save words. So it said hating no being. It didn't say love all humans. Mm-hmm. It didn't say, you know, love everybody, love your fellow man. Why did it say hating no beings? And if you analyze that, if you analyze just beings, it's saying not only humans, but all animals, birds, reptiles, everything. Not just humans, first of all. Secondly, it's not saying love all animals or right. love all human beings. It's saying hate none of them. Why? What's the difference? And Gautam Jain would ask us questions. We'd all raise our hand and come up with different answers. And he explained after many, many attempts by people that he said that it's easier if you ask somebody, do you love everybody? Do you love... people will say, I think I love everybody, right? But if you say, do you hate anybody? And you right away come across a few people, one person who you say, yeah, there's this one person that, or two people that I don't care for very much. Mm-hmm. So it's easier to focus on who you don't like, dislike, hate, than it is to say, do you love everybody? So that was the purpose of the Gita saying, hate no person. So how do you get past that? And I'll give you an example. First of all, let's see what it is that makes you like somebody, love somebody, and hate somebody. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts, any ideas? Yeah. If you think about it, and I say this to the audience, to say, think about it before you even go further, to say, what is it that makes somebody dear to you and somebody else that you don't like so much? Think about it. The answer is, whoever, and this will come into play in future verses also, future qualities, because this is very important. Who we like, who we are dear, who we find dear to us, who we prefer, are those that cater to us, those that agree with us, those that listen to us.
Those who give us something.
Those that give us something.
Yes.
So, again, it's a matter of I, mm-hmm. my desires, right. me. If you listen to me, if you don't argue with me, if you cater to my wishes, desires, then I like you. because I don't have any conflict with you.
Right.
But really, it's me that I'm catering to, because you're catering to me, therefore I like you. If every time I tell you something, you say, I don't really agree with you, I don't want to do that, you don't cater to my desires, I don't like you. Somebody who directly confronts me, I like even less. Somebody who tries to impose his will upon me, which I don't agree with, I absolutely hate.
Take something from me.
Yeah, so you say you're confronting
emotion,
me.
Emotion, energy,
don't like.
Ego, take something from me.
And after many, many years of living a certain life, a certain way, you tend to associate certain kinds of people, certain looks with that kind of behavior. Have all of us have experienced at some time that we feel a sense of fondness towards somebody just by looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
You just say, I like that guy.
Yeah.
He's a likable person. He may be a very evil person, but he's got a good way about him. He's got a good attitude on his face. You say, I like him.
Yeah.
And there's another person that you say, I just look at him and something about him I don't like.
Right.
Oftentimes, these are people who are looking different than you, different color, different facial stance, whatever. And you say, he's different, therefore doesn't meet my criteria, doesn't meet what I like. I don't like him.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get past that desire to say, these are my desires, and if you can understand that everybody has their own qualities, you can get further. So that's one thing, right? Keep in mind that somebody that meets your criteria for desires, fulfills your needs, doesn't confront you, is somebody that you like. The other thing is you don't like somebody who does things that don't agree with you. But that person may be following his own vasanas. You remember I said that everybody is a helpless victim of their own vasanas. So somebody who has vasanas to do some things, you say, I don't like him. But he's not doing it to hurt you, but he cannot help himself.
Right.
He's following his vasanas to make more money.
Vasanas are your desires or things you don't want.
Correct.
Right.
And I'm assuming that people who are listening up to this point have heard the previous basics.
Yep.
So I'm hoping, but good point.
I need to check you on lexicon.
Yes.
Because
yes.
It's new to a lot of us.
Yeah. Vasanas are desires that are greater than desires. They're the really engine behind the desires. And vasanas go with us from life to life and keep following us, and they get stronger with each time you fulfill them. So these are strong desires for beauty, fame, money, power, etc. We've discussed this before. So these vasanas cause somebody to do certain things, and you say, well, I don't like him because of that. Now, let's use that as an analogy. Gautam Jain said that one time he was jogging, and he came across a bird that picked up a worm on the sidewalk, and he stopped when he saw that. And the bird actually wanted to feed its babies in the nest. It took the worm and mashed it with its beak while the worm was wriggling and squiggling in his mouth, and just, you know, mashed it on the sidewalk, killed it, took the remains of the worm and flew up to the nest. Did Gautam Jain feel disgust towards the bird or hate it because it did that? No, because he says that's its vasana.
Yep.
That's what it's programmed to do. You see, on safari, if you go, when my wife and I went on a safari, we saw a cheetah killing an innocent deer.
Right.
It was a horrific sight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Had we seen a human being doing that, we would have said, oh, that was horrible. I hate that man for doing this.
Right.
However, we looked at the cheetah and the fawn and we said, that's nature. You know, that's awesome that we could get to see this, because the driver of the Land Rover drove the Land Rover right next to the kill. And then the cheetah's little babies came and ate the deer with it. But did we hate the deer for that? No, we were actually awed by how fast it ran and how it jumped on the deer and so on. Why did we not hate that? Because we said, it's expected. That's what cheetahs do. That's nature.
And there was no malintent on the cheetah's part.
Well, whether there was in human beings or not, the point is that that person, even though he may have malintent in his heart, he's doing it because those are his vasanas.
Gotcha.
So what the Gita says is, when you do an assessment of anybody, human beings are the only ones you cannot tell how they are until you actually get to know them. Animals, birds, you can tell. there are certain animals, just by knowing that this is a right. sheep, is going to be not harmful to me. This is a cow, she's not going to be harmful to me. This is a tiger, just by knowing it's a tiger, it belongs to that species, you say, I got to be careful, I got to back away.
Right.
Human beings, we don't know. Everybody's dressed in blue jeans and a T-shirt. You say, okay, how do I know which one of these is a killer and which one of these is a priest
right.
or a terrorist? You don't. With human beings, you've got to get to know them. And once you know their qualities, each time keep an open mind. And those that you feel have vasanas that are dangerous to you, be aware and stay away from them. Or take precautions against their vasanas. That's what the Gita says. So when you have such a person that you know has these vasanas, you have to basically be aware of them, stay away from them, take necessary precautions, but you don't hold it against them. You don't hate them for it.
Right.
When I was a younger man, I took martial arts classes. And the person who taught was a Japanese person, very modest, very mild. You would never know that he was a seventh degree black belt.
Yeah.
And he used qualities of the mind to tell us what is important and what is not, in addition to just teaching you how to defend yourself. And he says, basically, these martial arts are to be used to defend yourself, not to just use to attack somebody.
Right.
And he said, when somebody comes to you for a confrontation, you don't need to just immediately say, well, I can fight this person and fight him. What you need to do is to say, try and talk him out of it. Try and talk him down. And then after all conversation has finished, you say, I can't do this anymore, or he attacks you, use your skills to defend yourself, put him down, but again, without any disrespect, without disliking him, saying, this is what he did to me, I've got to put him down, but
right.
don't spit on him, don't curse at him, don't hurt, you know, insult him, and don't gloat that you won. Hold him till the authorities come and take him away, and then you step back and you go about your business and don't say, yeah, I
yeah.
did it, you know, nothing like that. What that is very Vedic, Vedantic, in that you have to take a lower attitude. You say, I'm doing this because I ought to do it, but these are his vasanas, I've put him in his place, now I'm going about my business. You don't hate him, you don't spit on him, you don't say insult him, and you say, I did it. So those are all very Vedantic things. So that's essentially what it says when you say don't hate somebody. So I said I was going to give you some examples. When I first learned this at Gautam Jain's feet in the classes many, many years ago, I was already a physician for many years. You know, I'd been in medical school starting about age 19, and we were taught as physicians to say, listen, when you're a young child and you're in school and you have a teacher and you say, teacher, I know, and you answer, but she seems to call on just the same one or two kids all the time because they look a certain way or they are a certain way or she likes them, you might feel pretty sad as a 5-year-old, 6-year-old child to say,
yeah.
Well, why am I different? Why isn't the teacher being fair to all of us? And as physicians, you've got to be equal with all patients. No patient should feel that you dislike them.
Right.
No patient should say, well, you don't like me. They have to feel that their doctor likes them, and you have to inculcate that within yourself to say, I like my patients. Whatever qualities they bring with me, because they bring a lot to you, they tell you a lot of stuff about their medical conditions
sure.
and about their emotional conditions and their actions.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like a priest. You're like a person that they come to with confession. And you have to put judgment aside. This is your patient, and you are their doctor.
Right.
So when I went to Gautam Jain's classes and he talked about hate no being, I was already a physician that had tried to imbibe this in my own self. I had said, okay, for the most part, and I don't remember saying about any patient, I don't like this patient.
Right.
But when I no longer was in the office with patients and I'm walking on the street, yeah, I would have feelings, say, I don't like this guy, I don't like this person, even if I don't know them. One particular example that I remember after this class, within a week or so as I was giving it some thought, hate no being, I said, this, if I can start on this, maybe the other 34 qualities will be easier. There was one particular, what is it called, Lou? A maintenance man who cleans the floor.
Janitor
mm-hmm. In the hospital. Walking out of the where my office was, and he was always in that hallway. And God had not given him a very pleasant face. He had a face that looked cruel, yeah, or as if, but I knew nothing about him.
Right.
I didn't know that he was cruel. He might have been the gentlest, nicest man ever. But he also had a scowl on his face all the time. Didn't seem to be a friendly, nice person. Nobody seemed to be interacting with him. You know, most right. of the time you see janitors, nurses, attendants in the hospital say, hey, doc, how you doing? Whatever. You talk to them. This guy, no.
No.
So, and he always gave people the impression, I don't like you. And so I got the feeling, well, I don't like you. And so I also, you know, that happens. It has a tendency to do the same with you. Now, after hearing this lecture from Gautam Jain, I was walking by him, and I made it a point, which was hard the first time, for me to put a smile on. After a couple of years of seeing him in the hallways and not being nice to him, I put on a smile, and I said, hey, how you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And he seemed surprised, didn't smile, didn't change his expression, just nodded to me like this. And I made it a point to say every time. And after that first instance where I said, hi, how you doing? It became much easier.
Right.
Second time was easier. Third time was easier.
He didn't attack you.
He didn't attack me. And yeah. I didn't get hurt by my having to lower my pride to say anything to
right.
him.
Yep.
Otherwise, it's like, oh, you don't like me? I'm not going to say anything to you. It was, right. used to be. This is years ago. As that happened, lo and behold, I was probably the only person that gave him a greeting as I walked by. He started smiling, and he started then being milder.
Right.
And after a while, I was probably the only person in the whole hospital that had a good relationship with him.
Right.
And I remember to this day, you know how you give somebody a high five or
yeah.
you shake their hand? This guy, because he was a janitor, I never knew first why he was doing this, he would say hi to me with his elbow. And the our technique was, when we're going yeah. by, you know, just hit each other by the elbow to say hello. And I was surprised the first time he raised his elbow. I didn't know what he was doing
yeah.
with his elbow. And then I did it. And I was probably the only person in the hospital. It made it so much easier
yeah.
for me. So that is hate no being. And I've been able to continue that with other people and to try to use that to my benefit. And it's made life so much simpler, and the other qualities, like I was yeah. saying, follow through.
So he probably had no idea what he was putting off for an effect.
I'm sure he still doesn't know.
Yeah, so
because I didn't take it upon myself to, and I,
yeah.
by the way.
But that's why it impacted him so greatly when you finally said, hi, how you
yeah.
doing? Because he hasn't got that response. He doesn't know he's got a face that says I'm angry or I don't like you.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, I've never had any conversations with him after that. I never talked to him. I didn't ask him about his family. I don't know anything
no.
about him. Just hello. That's all it took.
Yeah.
So the second quality is Maitra. Maitra means friendly. Here it is an internal feeling, because you do not hate any being. The feeling of not hating will manifest as a general feeling of attitude of friendliness towards the world. Maitra is general friendliness towards the world, which goes along with what I just said.
Yes.
Not hating any being. So if you don't hate anybody, everybody seems to be neutral to you.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
If you do not have any preferences, that to you all are alike, because now you're saying, I don't care what he does for me. I don't care what he thinks about me. I don't care if he likes me, doesn't like me. Everybody is alike to me. I hate nobody. You start to feel friendly towards everybody. So you're not, if you're frustrated internally, what happens? If you're not, you have likes, you have dislikes, you have frustration within yourself, that shows
right.
in your attitude. If you don't have that frustration, everything seems good, everything seems rosy, you seem happy with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have that friendliness, you're generally show it on your face. If you're morose, sad,
yes.
dejected, you're not a spiritual person, you're not a devotee, you're not a bhakta. You have strong preferences to with whom you relate to because of what I said before, that they cater to you, they agree with you, they show that they like you, then also you're not a devotee or a spiritual person or a bhakta. When you're frustrated inside because of your desires not being fulfilled, you cannot be cheerful and friendly. A devotee is friendly with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So, just as an example, Lou, when I first came to this studio, right, I didn't know anybody.
Right.
I first met the people that greeted me. I think you saw, you were in the studio busy with some other clients, and then you came down. By that time, I had three people in the room talking to me, and it seemed like we were all friends for a while. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah.
And it just seemed after that that everybody was very friendly. Why? Because I was not looking for anything from them.
Right.
I was only looking to say, what can I do for you? How can I, you know, benefit you? If one goes through life not wanting to take anything from anybody but give to people and say, I have nothing that you can cater to my likes or dislikes, it becomes so much easier. People say, hey, he's not looking to get anything from me.
Right.
If anything, he's giving to me, or neutral, they start to also feel the same way towards you.
Right. The give and take isn't adversarial or competitive.
Right. There's nothing like that. This is just neutral. If you want to take from me, if I can benefit you in some way, sure, I'll be happy to, but I want nothing in return from you. That makes it a lot easier. So that's the first quality, is hate no being. Mm-hmm. The second quality is maitra, which is friendliness. And the third quality is compassion. Compassion in Sanskrit is karuna. Now, people often combine the feeling of pity and compassion. Mm-hmm. And this can get confusing.
Yeah.
And in many respects, it's pretty similar. But the way it was explained to me is that pity is something that I'm doing because I want some quality, some discomfort, uneasiness within myself that I feel towards the person that's suffering to be quietened down. I see somebody suffering and I say, oh, I feel so sorry for him. That I feel so sorry for him, I want to get away, so I do something that I think is going to help him. Whether it actually helps him or not, it definitely helps me. Mm-hmm. I say, oh, well, I did something. I did my part.
Right.
I gave him $100.
It's easing you.
It's easing me.
Yes.
That's pity. Compassion, on the other hand, is empathy towards him. You do what you ought to do because you ought to do it, regardless of how it makes you feel. Whether it makes you feel good or not,
right.
You just do it. And that's compassion. That's the difference between pity and compassion. If you notice that around Christmas time, you will find that your commercials on TV are flooded with charities. And what they do is for 30 seconds or 1 minute, they prey on your emotions. It is a vulnerable time for a lot of people because it's the holidays, it's Christmas, it's Hanukkah. And so these charities basically, because after all, compassion, all of these are emotions.
Right.
Compassion is an emotion, and so it plays on your feelings of pity.
Right.
To say, look at this poor person starving in Africa, India, or these animals that are homeless. Please donate $1 a month or whatever, and people immediately take out their checkbooks. And I'm not saying don't do it.
Right.
I'm not saying that you shouldn't do it. I'm saying that you should do it because you choose this particular charity to give because you think that that's the right charity to give to, not because you're feeling sorry because of what you saw in them.
They're assigning guilt to you and how you're doing the donation to assuage your guilt.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So to make yourself feel better.
Right.
So compassion is a feeling of oneness with the other, accompanied by a strong intellect. This is true compassion. Pity is just impulsive. It is a selfish act just to satisfy your disturbance and the feeling in your mind. So those are the first three qualities of the 35 that are qualities of a bhakta or a spiritual person. The first one is hate no being. Second one is friendliness. The third one is compassion. And then we'll go on to others. Two other things that I'd like to mention while I'm here. And these are questions that came about in a WhatsApp study group about the Gita that we are part of. And somebody asked, well, why is it that one cannot identify these and, you know, think of these kind of things? And the analogy is that when you look at your body, if I say, how's your liver right now? You say, my liver? I don't know. Everything's fine. I don't feel anything.
Right.
How's your heart? I guess fine. I don't feel anything. How's your eyes? How's your ears? Everything's fine. I don't feel anything. What that means is that as long as your body's functioning, as long as everything's okay, you don't feel it. When you start to feel some pain in your right upper quadrant, you say, ah, that's my liver. Left part of your chest, you say, my heart.
Right.
Your ear, your eye starts to hurt, you say, I got to go to the doctor. I got to go to the doctor and get myself checked out. There's some problem here. You do not say, well, the weather is bad, my wife did this to me, my husband did that to me, my boss is not good. You don't say that. You say, something is wrong with me.
Right.
I need to go to the doctor, correct? That's the body. When it comes to your mind, when you have anxiety, stress, strain, unhappiness, whatever, what do you say? You say, it's my wife, it's my husband, it's my boss, it's my kids, it's the weather, it's
right.
the economy. Why don't you say, something's wrong with me? So we need to recognize that when we have that stress, strain, anxiety, depression, all of these things that I just said, it's because our mind is not able to handle the outside. It's not the outside.
Right.
The outside continues to change. The weather is going to change. It's going to get hotter, colder. We recognize that if we stay in the northern part of the United States,
right.
there's going to be winter. If one doesn't like it, don't stay here. Go to some place where there's no winter. But if you choose to stay here, understand that there's no going around the fact that there's going to be winter, and in December it's going to be cold and snowing.
Right.
No point complaining about it. It's not going to change. Adjust your mind to the fact that these things are going to happen. The economy goes up, the economy goes down. When the economy is up, you're celebrating. When the economy is down, don't complain.
Right.
So we need to recognize that it's us. Point about complaining is not there. Second thing we need to talk about is rituals and why people do them. The Gita does not condone rituals, does not prescribe rituals, does not say you should do rituals. So a lot of people say, what should I be doing?
Yeah.
The only thing you need to do here is to listen. That's the beauty. Once you listen, as I gave the example of, I learned about hating no being, put it into effect right away, friendliness towards the world, put it into effect as much as I could. If you start doing these, and there's 35 qualities of a devotee or a spiritual person, there's qualities of an intellectual person, there's qualities of a self-realized person, all of these put together, if you can follow even one of them, the rest will follow.
Mm-hmm. All of them is about living in your intellect as opposed to your mind.
Yes.
All of them is about that quality to be able to overcome what your mind is feeding you.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So these are directly related to emotions. You'll see when you talk about the intellectual qualities, there'll be others, and then those of a self-realized person. So we'll talk about those as time goes on. Thank you, Lou.